is in the building.
Welcome, everybody, to the Bald Move Television Podcast, the podcast that talks about all the television all the time. I'm your host, Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
And we're going to be talking about a variety of things. We're going to talk about some Comic-Con trailers for television right up front. Then we're going to move into gradually more spoilery things, discussions of stuff that's been on recently that we've been watching. Please use the show notes to jump around if you want to avoid spoilers. But in general, we're going to be talking about Comic-Con trailers, Deep Space Nine, Silicon Valley, Danger Five, 5 Days in Hell, Ballers and the Brink.
5 days. I spent 7 days in hell. I don't know what you're talking about.
Did I say 5 days in hell?
Yeah.
Danger 5 days in hell. I just did a mashup. Get on an HBO. So let's start with the first Comic-Con trailer we're going to discuss, Ash versus the Evil Dead.
Yeah.
It's going to premiere on the Starz Network on Halloween, 10/31/2015. Appropriate.
Yeah.
I did not expect much when I heard about this, and I was very pleasantly surprised with the trailer. How about you?
It has Bruce Campbell, and it has gore, and, you know, supernatural hauntings. Like, how can you not be super pleased by this if you're a fan?
And old Bruce Campbell.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, not as old as, like, his Bubba Hotep get up, but, like, you know.
Sure.
Current 2015 Bruce Campbell, you put him in front of a camera, that's what he looks like.
And he's still Ash, you know? It's not like he's changed much.
It's Ash wearing a girdle.
Pretty much, yeah. But I like that, you know, they continue kind of a storyline that makes sense for how old he is.
Yeah.
They're not trying to, like, oh, let's, I don't know, do some effects or something to make him look like old Ash.
And this does seem like it is a direct continuation of either Evil Dead 2, or perhaps they're going to work the Army of Darkness plot in there. I mean, he doesn't have his robo hand.
Yeah, he's got chainsaw hand.
And I'm not sure if he lost. It's been so long since I've seen Army of Darkness. I don't know that maybe his robotic arm got destroyed or something, but who knows? I don't know, but it's definitely more of the campy horror and blood and guts from the Evil Dead 2 and Army of Darkness than it is the straight up horror of the first Evil Dead.
Yeah, and I have a lot of hope. Like, one of my favorite things in the Evil Dead series was just like the geysers of blood that would just shoot out of walls and just kind of randomly, you'd get soaked in blood, and I think they're going to continue that in this one, so I'm super excited.
And it looks funny. Now,
yeah,
concerns?
That it's a longer version of the Evil Dead. I wonder if they can continue to make things interesting and exciting and novel.
Will it overstay its welcome?
Yeah.
I mean, all the Evil Dead films have always been on the shorter side. I don't think there's one that's over, like, 90 minutes long.
Yeah, they're all real short.
And if you have a 10, 12, 13, whatever, little miniseries, can they keep that, you know, plot going and make it varied and interesting enough and have actual character development that has to occur in the better comedies? I don't know. But Bruce's broad shoulders can carry a lot. He's got a lot of charisma. Mm-hmm. So definitely I will be tuning in on Halloween. I mean, what else are you going to do on Halloween?
Have a party, but
trick or treat. But then you're going to record Ash versus the Evil Dead and watch that shit.
That's probably the right thing to do, you know, DVR it.
Let's talk about Fear the Walking Dead, another Comic-Con trailer. This one's going to premiere August 23rd, 2015. Just in time for my birthday. Robert Kirkman, you shouldn't have. Probably no, really, you shouldn't have.
I don't know. I'm kind of excited for this, honestly.
I am dreading it because I think we are probably going to cover it day one. And, you know, my least favorite, theoretically, my favorite part of the zombie thing is how everything falls and that civilization falling apart.
Yes.
But as you know, if you've read any of my survival guides or you've heard me talk on a podcast, I have a hard time suspending my disbelief that a modern civilization with the military and civil, you know, suppression capacities that even our, you know, a SWAT team in L.A., that they would actually have a hard time dealing with the zombie threat as portrayed on The Walking Dead. Now, rage virus zombies, maybe, but slow shambling zombies, I don't know. But let's talk about why are you excited? Because I've got a couple other concerns, but why are you excited for this one?
It feels like a chance to re-roll The Walking Dead in a way that's more interesting to me. Like, I don't know if Kirkman's going to go there. I know he says he never wants to, you know, cover the Cure stuff and all that. But I think, for me, the most interesting part of a zombie or apocalyptic film is the outbreak itself. And, like, the survival, like, almost immediately after. Like, where do you go to? How do you try and set up some kind of society that's going to be able to survive, you know, the dangers of this apocalypse? I'm hoping that they will stick around in that scenario a little bit longer, maybe take their time.
It's arguably
not go years into the future within a couple of seasons.
Yeah, and how would they do that? I mean, it's arguable that that's the most dangerous time of the zombie apocalypse, because you've got an unknown threat that no one really knows quite how to deal with, and you also have a lot of living humans that are desperate.
Sure.
So, like, a lot of things you could say, like, okay, 1 year post-apocalyptic, you find a Sam's Club and you hole up and you're pretty much win for the next 5 to 10 years. That's a dicier proposition if you're in a major metropolitan area.
Oh, yeah.
You're just going to take over a Sam's Club or a Home Depot or whatever and hold it.
Yeah, everybody has that idea. So yeah. Good luck holding something like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You either need to hope that you can negotiate or have a lot of arms.
I mean, you and I are set. We've got the Apache attack helicopter now.
Yeah,
but everybody else, I don't know. I mean, maybe you can hold 1-2 people in that thing. They can hang on to landing gear or whatever.
But that's why I'm excited.
Okay.
In particular, I like that part of the apocalypse.
Okay. Concerns, other than the one that I mentioned?
It's The Walking Dead, and we know what Robert Kirkman has said about that whole thing. I know that, you know, Walking Dead is more about the drama of the character relationships. I hope that this show is not that.
Mm-hmm.
I hope that this is not just Walking Dead 2.0. I want it to feel substantially different. And I think that trailer gives me a little bit of hope that it will. But also, that trailer is probably from episode 1, right?
Yeah.
Like 95% of the footage.
Yeah. What do you think about the prospect of getting some more zombie science?
I'm super excited for that.
Do you think that they're going to have something interesting to say about the zombie science that's actually going to inform the multiple seasons that we have of the original Walking Dead?
I hope so.
Like, what can they say about it that will, you know, because we haven't heard anything about zombie science after, what, the CDC?
Yeah, you know that movie Contagion?
Yeah.
I like that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, where people are not just trying to survive and dealing with a soap opera inside a Sam's Club or something, mm-hmm. but they're actively working to fix the situation.
Mm.
And that's something we never get in Walking Dead, right?
Yeah.
They're never focused on, like, how do we fix this? They're more focused on how do we survive this? And
sure.
I feel like once you figure out what you're doing to survive, come on, get on to fixing stuff.
But we know they're doomed to failure. I mean, it might, and also I don't know, you know, how many seasons can they get of just the initial outbreak? Like, even if like one episode is one day or maybe even several hours in a day, like, eventually you're going to have to move into where you were in season 1 of The Walking Dead.
And then
what happens?
Well, I mean, if you look at shows like Breaking Bad, that whole show is a 2-year run, right?
Yeah.
And there is a lot of time that you don't see. So if they wanted to go more like direct 1-to-1 sort of thing, they could do it.
I guess.
Like a 24, but, you know, somewhere in between.
I feel like if they don't do pretty aggressive 24 style, then it's going to not really work. It's going to progress into Walking Dead 2.0 after the first season or two.
Yeah, that's what I don't want.
That's my other concern is that it features prominently two potentially apparently whiny teenagers.
Uh-huh.
And that seems to be the bane of dramatic television. Like, we've been somewhat spoiled in recent years that we've had some good teenage characters.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you think a shit like Terra Nova, like the more, you know, anything on sci-fi, your Sharknadoes. I was a little leery of what I saw from the trailers. Those kids look like they're angsty and they're rebellious, and they might be the type to be like, fuck you don't know anything about zombies. I'm going to run out here and, you know, my girl needs me.
I think the tone of the trailer that they released has me excited. I want to see that epic outbreak. I like what they're doing with that so far from what I've seen of, you know, the 3-minute trailer.
All right. Moving on to The Walking Dead Season 6, also on AMC. Mm-hmm. Premieres on 10/11/2015, just a couple weeks before Halloween. In fact, I heard that the plan is that there's going to be a 1 week hiatus in between Fear the Walking Dead to Walking Dead, and in between they're going to do a Walking Dead marathon.
Okay.
Potentially a black and white Walking Dead marathon, which I quite enjoyed the first time they did. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty bullish on this season. I know we say that a lot, but this season looks pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, you know, they're holed up in Alexandria now, and I think,
like, other than the prison plot, the Alexandria plot is probably the most interesting stuff that The Walking Dead's ever done.
Yeah, no, I'm totally with you. I like that stuff, and it looks like I'm finally going to get my wall of walkers.
Yeah, you got a horde coming.
I mean, I'm super excited for that. Let's see how that cold rolled steel holds up.
Cold roll.
When you got more than a dozen walkers at the gate.
Crazy zombie effects. Like, yeah. I know that's an annual thing, but you got like various, you know, swamp thing zombies.
Uh-huh.
You got shit monster zombies in the sewers.
Shit walkers.
like these. That's the other thing we didn't talk about. Fear the Walking Dead is those zombies are fresh.
Oh, yeah.
They're just fell off a turnip truck zombies. We haven't seen zombies like that since early season one.
Yeah.
Even maybe fresher than that. All these zombies are way past their prime. And I wonder if that's going to be something that they weave into the zombie lore. Like, these things are getting decrepit and pathetic.
I think so. Yeah.
All right.
I mean, they're probably getting pretty hungry if they can't find humans to eat.
It looks like they're setting up a lot of conflict between Rick and Morgan. However,
and some outside force too.
And that's what I'm saying. Like, they're wanting us to believe that Rick and Morgan are butting heads. Do you buy that? Because I noticed there was a lot of bullshit editing where lines that Morgan are saying that's antagonistic are never coming out of his mouth with Rick. It's always his words over Rick's face, but they don't seem like they're from the same scene. And when Rick is shooting, so I'm thinking that maybe they're arguing with third parties here. And they're editing it together to make it look like this Batman versus Superman thing.
So the feeling I get from that trailer is that there is going to be some conflict for Morgan and Rick, but it's going to be dealt with quickly, and then the outside forces are going to be the real trouble.
And it's going to be more of a, you know, John, or more of a Locke versus, who's the guy?
Jack?
Jack. It's going to be like a Locke-Jack thing, where it's more of a philosophical than a real, like, come to blows type.
Yeah, I mean, they've got to deal with the aftermath of killing what's Jesse's husband.
Yeah,
whatever his name was, and killing Reggie. I mean, there's gonna be some problems there at first, but I think they're gonna deal with it pretty fast because Deanna is that her name? Deanna seems like she's on board with Rick from almost the jump, you know?
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, I think once that guy stumbled in to kill her husband, that has a way of, once you get skin in the game, has a way of crystallizing. What do you think about Daryl? He looks like he's put in several bad spots in this trailer.
Uh-huh.
What do you think?
All right. I'm always happy to see Daryl go after some fools.
I'm going to go ahead and put his death at 100% chance.
Already, okay.
This season six. I don't know if it's first half or second half, but I'm swinging for the fences. I think Daryl is worm food before before the season's out.
You know who I don't recall seeing in that trailer?
Who?
Maggie.
Ooh. You know what?
Do you remember seeing her?
We also had some debate about whether we saw Tara getting her throat ripped out.
I don't think it was. We came to the conclusion that...
I don't think it was either, but it's hard to judge on the YouTube trailer. Like, I'm pretty sure it wasn't, but it definitely made us do a lot of Zapruder style frame by frame breakdowns. And, you know, are those boobs Tara-esque? What about that nose? Or what's
the hair?
Was she going in for a fist bump on that zombie before he caught it with his teeth? I don't know. But no, I think that trailer looks incredible. And, you know, some of the savage looks that Rick is rocking,
and the music that they put on is much better than
the
dubstep kind of synth pop stuff they've been doing lately.
I think it was pretty incredible. Gives me high hopes for the new season, and if nothing else, Walking Dead's always fun to cover. Heroes Reborn,
oh boy,
this is the last of our Comic-Con trailers we're going to discuss. I was not impressed with this trailer. I thought the production values, while it looks like they spent a lot of money on it,
they're slick,
but it almost too slick, like in a
Star Trek sort of way, modern Star Trek.
I don't know. Like, what was that Ben Stiller movie about the superheroes? The Misfits. Had Janine Garofalo in it and William H. Macy. The Mystery Men. It's slick like that. Like, it's been a lot of money, but maybe there's something wrong with the design. Like, you got this dude that looks like an up-armored version of Kick-Ass.
Yep.
That's not a flattering comparison if you're, unless he is deliberately like, hey, in-universe, I watched Kick-Ass, and I thought it was cool, and I've got similar powers, so I'm going to make, like, a up-armored version of that. Mm. Even that is kind of a weird idea, but... yeah, everything about it was like, if you take WB, CW type sensibilities and you give it an NBC budget, that...
And everybody's kind of about the age you'd expect from a CW show, except for the people who've come back, right? Like Mohinder and the man with glasses and Hero.
Yeah, I and then at the end, you've got that like, you know, bloody... Eclipse Sun, and there's this girl who looks exactly like she stepped out of the live action Airbender movie. Also not a flattering pop culture comparison.
No, that was a terrible movie.
And you know, the pedigree for Heroes, not great. Like,
yeah, season one was fantastic. I thought
season two I gave up on quickly.
Me too.
And I don't know, I don't see anything that makes me really think that that's just going to be amazing.
I don't either, unfortunately. The trailer didn't excite me that much.
Like, I was more excited for The Strain when I saw, and I'm talking about season two, but like, you looking at season one, oh, this looks pretty cool. Yeah. I did not get that vibe from Heroes. So maybe it'll be the opposite of The Strain and it'll actually be really good, but I don't know. I'm probably going to see what the reviews say.
Yep.
That concludes our San Diego Comic-Con trailer spots. Now we got a couple other stuff that we've been watching. One thing I wanted to mention, I know you haven't seen yet, and I just got around to, I watched the first four episodes in the last two nights. It's The Spoils Before Dying, which is a sequel to, it's on IFC. It's a sequel to last year's The Spoils of Babylon. And what the conceit is that Will Ferrell is this very pretentious author that was famous in the 50s and 60s that wrote these series of, like, you know, epic historical pieces. You know, like a combination between Shogun and The Great Gatsby, and they adapted his work to film, but for some reason, because of censorship and scandal, that these were buried, and he's finally won the rights of it back, and the rights have elapsed, and he's producing it, and he introduces in like this giant fat makeup with his beard. It's kind of like a George R. R. Martin thing. He introduces each episode, and that's kind of funny because it's Will Ferrell just being crazy. And then it's just a parody of various like 80s miniseries. Okay. And they even present it over sequential nights on IFC to kind of keep that thing going. Hmm. And it gets big belly laughs from me. It's got Omar Little, Michael K. Williams in it as starring. It's got a bunch of SNL alumni, current and past. It's Funny or Die long form. Okay. And I think it's really funny. I recommend everybody you can watch the entire series on IFC's website right now, so you can't beat that. Let's go into that to 7 Days in Hell, because it's got a lot of the similar sensibilities.
Yeah, it's got a lot of SNL and former SNL people.
This is Andy Samberg and Kit Harington of Jon Snow fame. I thought this is the hardest I've laughed at television, and I'm going to say that a lot because I've been watching some funny shit. This is the hardest I've watched in television, I've laughed in television for a long time.
Yeah, no, I went into it thinking, oh, okay, this is going to be a funny tennis mockumentary. And it is, but it's way more ridiculous, and it had far less tennis in it than I expected.
Although the tennis that they showed is incredible.
It is. There are some really good points in that.
There are some like really, really good points in a way that the match lasts 7 days. I thought the way they stretched it out was clever on the most part. Mm-hmm. Kit Harington is incredible. Like,
he plays very different character from what you'd expect.
I had no idea he could be, because like, just keeping your composure and not breaking in some of the ridiculous things that he has to get up to and some of the chemistry he has with the other heavy hitters, I just thought was amazing. And they have a whole bunch of, I don't know if you call them outtakes, because they seem like they're deliberately filmed as like in-universe documentary outtakes. Yeah. Some of the stuff over the credit sequence was as funny as anything that we'd saw in the main documentary.
Yeah, and like seeing all of the people in it, like, you know, you've got a whole bunch of comedians, a whole bunch of people from SNL, like Lena Dunham's in it. I thought she was great as the president of Jordache. Yeah. Pretty amazing.
Especially since she's the wardrobe, because this, you know, Annie Samberg is essentially a more extreme version of Andre Agassi.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I could buy that.
And the sensibilities that he had back then. So yeah, Jordache, yeah. Jordache being his wardrobe provider, you know, a lot fantastic. Of denim-based tennis fashion was pretty good.
And then like having Jim Lampley in it was really cool.
The real HBO sports guys. And it opens up like it's a real HBO sports film. They have all the same logos and heraldry and credit seat. It's really, really, that to me makes it even funnier. The more attention to detail that you have. I loved all the British stuff. Is it Martin Sheen? No, not Martin
Michael
Sheen.
Michael Sheen.
Yeah. Not, no relation.
No.
He is so funnily like creepy British. Yeah. It's really funny. The Queen, I thought, is really funny. The unauthorized footage of Dolph Lundgren, I assume, is extreme.
With the
3D reenactments of some of these scenes, I thought was pretty.
I have no idea what he's saying. He's talking in German or something,
I think so, yeah. Or whatever.
And they just subtitle
is.
It with some ridiculous stuff.
Yeah, they have the young 80s Dolph Lundgren, and they just, since he's speaking a different language, they just feel free to put words in his mouth. Yeah. I wonder what he thought of that.
I don't know.
Because, you know, he's a really well-educated dude. I feel like his sensibilities probably would not be towards the outrage, but I don't know. Maybe I should find out on Twitter.
Yeah.
This is, and it's only 40 minutes long. Mm-hmm. I had some pretty high expectations for this, and they were pretty much all met.
Yeah, me too. A lot more nudity than I expected in that.
A lot of nudity.
Animated nudity.
If you want to get your funny. If you want to get your dong ratio straightened out from Game of Thrones,
yeah, there you go.
tune in, because it's pretty impressive. Yep. Anything else you want to say about that before we move on?
No, I'd definitely recommend it, though.
Something else you've been watching a lot of.
Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, you got the Star Trek bug. It infected you.
I did, man. Over the, you took a little vacation, and I decided to take a little vacation of my own just to binge watch some stuff. And I
to Deep Space Nine.
I started out with a little bit of Next Generation, and I was like, you know what? This isn't scratching my itch, because I've had the DS9 itch for a while.
Right.
I was hoping we'd maybe do something for Bald Move with it, but I don't think we're going to. So I went ahead and watched like the first three seasons of DS9 over 6 days or something.
Okay. How did that treat you?
It treated me really well. Like, I was surprised about a few things, and I, you know, fell back into the old, all of the old tricks of DS9 pretty early on.
So, like, what were, you mentioned the surprises. I guess that's the one thing I'm most interested about.
The timeline is what really surprised me. Like, how quickly they get into, like, the Dominion stuff.
Oh, really?
Like, the Jem'Hadar are in season two.
No way.
You see the Jem'Hadar in season two, and they're like...
See, because my mental map of that is like whatever the Galaxy-class starship that gets rammed and exploded when like the whole fleet sallies forth from the...
I haven't even got to that yet.
Oh, okay. Well, then I might be right. Because to me, that's the start of the Dominion War, when they get the fleet all together and you think it's going to be this massacre and they just get wiped out. Like the start.
Yeah,
I felt like an end of season three.
The true start of the Dominion War is, yeah, definitely later on. But, you know, you're introduced to the Jem'Hadar at the end of season two.
The Founders?
The Founders are in season three, I think.
Okay. What about Wei? And so Wei Yun doesn't show up till season. Because if you said like Wei Yun and the Founders are running on season two, I was prepared to call. I was like,
no,
like what
no,
the
no,
hell?
No. No, but a lot of the stuff that's kind of, you know, precursor to the actual Dominion Wars happens pretty early on, like season two, early season three stuff. Like I was super impressed by the storyline where, you know, the Gamma Quadrant is kind of messing with the Alpha Quadrant,
right?
And they're stirring up shit and causing all these forces to fight against each other, like excluding. So you know, they open up the wormhole, they discover, oh, there's this Dominion thing.
Mm-hmm.
And they start to like try to form an alliance, right? Like mm-hmm. a trade agreement or whatever.
Right.
And the Romulans are specifically excluded from that.
Mm-hmm.
And they do that entirely to stir up shit, to make the Romulans angry that they weren't included. And they come in
because they're xenophobic and.
Yeah. And now you've got if you want to fight the Dominion, you've got a two front war.
Yeah.
One through the wormhole and one at your back. So. Yeah. I thought that was really cool, just the way that the pieces came together there. And I don't know. It's really good. there's, you know, a lot of DS9 type stuff that I really enjoy and a lot that I hate.
Okay.
Like, I really love Quark and Odo.
Quark's the best.
Like, Quark and Odo's interactions are...
Although I'm a big Elam Garrick
prime
fan.
Prime time. Elam?
Yeah. Elam Garrick, the tailor.
Oh, Garrick. Yeah, yeah. You're right. His first name is Elam. Yeah. I totally forget that. But yeah, Garrick.
And but
he's awesome.
When did him and Bashir start, like, having their tea times?
Pretty
and
early
stuff?
On.
Okay, because I was wondering if that was a late development, because some of my favorite moments are between their, like, philosophical discussions.
Yeah, they don't do a ton of it, but they're, you know, having their lunch meetings.
Okay.
Every day, or breakfast, or coffee, or whatever it is.
Right on.
Ractigino. That's what seemingly everybody's drinking now, which I think is the equivalent of coffee in that universe. But you know, all of the, like, how the fuck did that happen sort of intros,
like
they'll take a character and they'll show them murdering someone who you would never suspect.
Oh yeah.
A character would murder anybody.
Yeah.
At the beginning of the episode. And then you go, like, how do they get there? Kind of like in Breaking Bad, you know, where Walt's walking away from Tuco's hideout.
Yeah.
And it explodes,
flames,
and you're like, how did that man get to that situation?
Yeah.
They do that a lot in DS9.
Huh.
And I like that stuff. There's some really bad stuff in DS9. Though,
really?
Early on. Like season one has maybe the worst hour of television I've ever seen.
Which one is that?
It's so there's an episode called Move Along Home, and it's an entire episode where Quark cheats this alien race, called like the Wadi or something. And he cheats them out of some money at the Dabo table, and they say, oh, well, now you have to play our game. And their game involves taking the crew members and putting them into some kind of alternate
dimension. How do they do that? Because, like...
I don't even know. It doesn't explain it. That's the thing.
If you can do that, then why are you messing around with Dabo?
I don't know.
That's, man, like, but you and I deciding, hey, you know, let's play war. Mm-hmm. Let's play like a 52 card just bullshit tiddlywink game, you know.
Yeah, it's like that, except, you know, all of your friends and family are in an alternate dimension and they're the ones actually playing the game. You're just rolling dice and moving your pieces.
Mm-hmm.
And then they've got to, like, solve puzzles and do fucking hopscotch mm-hmm. while they sing nursery rhymes. I mean, it's fucking horrible, man.
Star Trek traditionally struggles with visualizing futuristic pastimes. Like, remember the video game episode of Star Trek?
Oh, the one where they're all like, everybody gets
addicted.
Everyone
plays that thing that zaps your eyeballs, and then you're putting, like, CGI clay pigeons into CGI
it's
wormholes.
Bad, yeah.
Like, yeah, okay. That's not even, you know, like, that's not even iPhone game level bullshit. That's like Bejeweled. Like, I'd buy someone to get addicted to Bejeweled, but this shit.
Like, I don't even know what Quark and the game players are doing while the alternate dimension stuff is playing out.
Yeah.
Are they standing there looking at each other? Because there's no representation in the real world of that.
Really?
It's just they move a piece and the guy goes, oh, ha, ha, ha,
it's Jumanji, Deep Space Jumanji.
It really is just, oh.
Wow.
It's terrible. You need to watch it again because it's so bad.
All right. What other bugaboos do you have?
I don't know. Anytime they focus on, like, a Kai or a Vedic or something.
Oh, God.
I'm always like,
Kai Winn.
She's the worst.
She's the worst. She's like, you know, I want to take back all the bad things I've ever said about the president on Battlestar Galactica. Because Kai Winn is her crank to 11.
Yep.
Oh, my God. She's the worst.
Yeah. I mean, she's so self-righteous and power hungry and she lies.
Smug.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean,
she's
for
like
as smug as Bashir is, she's like 10 times as smug.
Yeah, and half as charming.
And Bashir gets, like, less smug and a better character as he goes.
When we were talking about over lunch, it kind of gave me a chuckle, and I forgot about the way they do this. But, like, you know, you got the Dominion War raging.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah, yeah.
And then they take time to, like, okay, you know, Gul Dukat kicks in Cisco's office door, puts a disruptor right in his face, starts to pull the trigger. Next time on Deep Space Nine, Cisco rounds up everybody to play baseball against the Vulcans.
Or like
the Federation, the founders about to invade the Federation homeworld, and they've infiltrated it at the highest levels.
Yeah.
But it's time to figure out what Quark's going to do in 1950s Earth.
That's right. They have a holodeck adventure and get stuck. Like, I wonder if all that stuff happens, like, concurrently. Like, the Dominion War is raging. You see Sisko's point of view, and then they go to, like, a Quark episode or something.
I think your point, and I don't never, I wonder why they decided that 24 episodes per season is the right number.
That's just how you did it, man. I don't know.
But, like, these early efforts to do episodic television really suffer from that. Because, like, you know, some of the X-Files, to a lesser extent, you know, it's like we... They were overall pretty entertaining, the Monster of the Week versus the Myth Arc. But when you've got the Myth Arc, it's like, oh my god, we just found out the Shadowy Cabal is inserting this black oil into all these children's eyeballs. Next week, hey, we got a phone call about some slug in a sewer. Let's get right on it. You know, it's like, that stuff doesn't, like, I feel like Deep Space Nine would be a really killer 13-episode season.
Oh, man, you could compress, like, seasons 1 through 3 into a single 12-episode season. There are, like, 2, maybe 3 episodes that matter in season one.
Because that's the other thing, is the kind of one-off weird episodes, they never, there's no character development that ever happens in those. It's like reset button.
Yeah, I mean, like,
pushed.
I wonder what that would do to, like, Garrick and Bashir, right? Like, if you don't see them having all of these,
you're right, the B characters don't really get main plots.
Quark
in...
with the Negus and all this stuff. I don't know. I think you could probably do it, but it would take a. I think it would be much better if it were a 12 episode.
I will say that the strength of that format is you can have, like, just crowd pleasing episodes, like, you know, Data's Day and some of the other stuff that is just silly. That you can't do in a Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Like, the closest you can get is Walt and Jesse getting stuck in the desert out for a couple of days and some robot jokes and stuff like that. But, like, imagine if, like, Walt and Jesse decide to go on vacation. They're going to... Jesse talked him into going to Tijuana. And they just get misadventures that don't matter, a hill of beans down in Tijuana. That would be kind of cool. Like, for one episode a season, you could do some kind of non-canonical thing in your favorite show.
That's the interesting thing, right? That the tone of that show totally changes, like, season 4 through season 7.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, it gets dark. It gets it gets desperate. It gets...
When does Worf show up?
Season 3.
Okay. Because I would be really shocked if you said season 2. Because I kind of feel like... Yeah, like they
get the Defiant, and then Worf is sleeping on the Defiant by season 4. Like, no joke, Sisko gives him permission to live on the Defiant.
That's a safety hazard, because if he starts sleepwalking and decides to ram, you know, go to ramming speed, it's all over. Worf, what the hell's wrong with you? You're more different than Odo,
right? Right.
You're more individual and standoffish than him. Come on, get the hell out of here.
Yeah.
All right, well, that's cool. Blast from the past. Because I don't really have any desire to go back and watch some of those first seasons, because I didn't like them. I remember being very kind of lukewarm on Deep Space Nine, and thankfully that was, like, during the prime time of TNG. Like, I believe TNG wrapped up in either Deep Space Nine season 2 or season 3. Where would you recommend, like, a guy like me to pick up, start watching, and not miss any of the Dominion stuff? Like, to season 4? Should I start at season 3?
Yeah, I think you could start at season 4.
That's when the Dominion War really kicks off.
Yeah. And there's still filler in those seasons.
Oh,
it's
not
like
you're
not
going to ever get away from it.
Yeah. I think maybe season, like, 7 might not be much filler. But yeah, season 4 still has some filler, but that's where things start to heat up. And I feel like maybe I should write a guide for it. Like,
that would be cool.
Go watch these couple of episodes from seasons 1, 2, and 3. Just kind of like a Dominion guide, you know?
Yeah. Agreed. What's the young version of Dax? Because that's the other thing. Even though I liked...
Oh, I don't know her name.
It's Jack Z is the good, the good Dax. But I love that character, and I thought they were really cool. Ezri. Wasn't it Ezri?
I think so.
But as good as Deep Space Nine got later in its run, I always was disappointed that they couldn't keep Jadzia around.
Yeah.
But then again, you can't. What are you going to do? The actress quit. All right. Should we move on from Deep Space Nine now?
Sure.
Do you want to talk about Silicon Valley? I know this has been off the air for like 5 weeks now. We've been kind of wanting to talk about it. What the hell? People can skip it if they're not interested.
Yeah.
What do you think of the sophomore season of Silicon Valley?
I thought it was even better than season one. It was more consistently funny.
Agreed.
I thought they did some really innovative and interesting things with their comedy in that series. I'm a big fan of Mike Judge, so it does have his trademark style, but it also has like moments like the end of episode two where Gavin comes to Richard and says, you know, this lawsuit, I could drop it and I'll buy you out or whatever. And you can come
They're
work for me.
They're having this intense...
And he slides this packet of paper across the thing with his terms. And he's like, I want an answer. What do you think about this? What do you say? And Richard goes, what do I say? I say, and then all of a sudden a mariachi band, because they are in a Mexican restaurant, a mariachi band starts playing up. And they're both annoyed by it.
It makes conversation impossible.
They can't talk. And they just go to credits and let this whole thing play out for a good 3 minutes.
Yeah, that's pretty good.
It was brilliant.
I honestly liked it. I mean, there's some questionable things about technology, but not even for a guy who did, you know, that's kind of like what I did for my career. I never worked at a true startup, but I did do a lot of work at a lot of software shops that developed a lot of software. And I thought like a lot of that stuff is pretty funny or plausible. I really liked the idea of the guy setting the gross tequila bottle on the keyboard, deleting all those files.
I
liked that a lot.
Fact that it's their financier, their financier is like, oh my God.
He's so terrible.
Yeah.
And I really like the idea of the fact that you had the disgruntled IT worker that everybody's worried about, but he actually never is the real threat.
Yeah. And there's some really funny, just like, you know, startup stuff, like the SWAT system. You know, because like all startup like their systems,
I had to fucking do that every year and quarterly at the company. I don't want to mention his name, but the company I worked on,
And, you know, this show has like a pedigree of doing that, right? Like taking these ridiculous whiteboarded scenarios and turning them into really funny things. And I feel like they used their SWAT system to great effect. That was the homicide episode where they were doing this deal with an energy drink company, and one of the guys was going to do a stunt, and they were trying to decide whether or not to let him die because he had some miscalculations.
Yeah, yeah.
Really hilarious stuff.
I thought that was pretty funny. One thing I also thought, who's the Torpy guy who was this like the CFO?
Jared.
Jared. Yeah, I thought
OJ by the end of it.
Jared, I liked some of the stuff they did with him and the gender dynamics of Silicon Valley. You know, that he
was
like,
hire.
Yeah, like he's one of those guys who is trying to be sensitive, but he's actually coming across as more sexist than the guys who are openly sexist.
Yeah, yeah.
I thought that was kind of interesting. But on the other hand, the female that they introduced into the show is that the female engineer is kind of like as big a bro as the other guys are. Sure. And I felt like some of the message they're saying is, well, this is what you need to be to survive in this, you know, any kind of STEM thing. And I'm not sure how that sat with me.
Yeah, I could see why you might have a problem with that.
Yeah.
I understand.
And I liked, you know, some of the things like he's like, oh, we got two women now, so you should be friends. And like trying to pressure them.
I mean, it's a
like,
satire ultimately, right?
Yeah. Yeah, no, then there are really guys like that. Like, you know, if you're like the tomboy, you know, big sister type programmer, then great, fine, whatever. But, you know, I'm sure there's a lot of, you know, just like I don't know, it's weird because the whole IT field is going through the sea change where less and less it's about the hardcore nerds.
Yeah.
And more just everyday people say, hey, you can make money in this. So, you know, like it used to be that everyone had the same fucking story. You go into an IT shop and
I spent my teens programming in my basement.
I had TRS-80, a Commodore 64, and I typed in basic programs from, you know, Byte magazine and I was doing peeking and poking and all this stuff. And like everybody nowadays, that's not true. You've got Chinese and Indians that don't know any, you know, they've never had that kind of shit. And then you've got just people from different backgrounds. You got jocks. One of the programmers was a referee for basketball and was like played college basketball and didn't like video games. It's like, what? You know? Yeah. It's crazy.
And it's got, you know, Silicon Valley has, not the show, but the place, has kind of developed its own culture, which is equally as homogenized.
Yeah.
It's like if you aren't
culturally
parasailing every yes. other weekend, you're not part of the culture.
Yeah.
Like, you need to be slamming booze while you're programming, or fuck you, we don't want to party.
Well, it's like I said, the programming culture.
Exactly. That's become very much what Silicon Valley is.
Which is weird, because I feel like the whole bro thing was an ironic adoption, but now it's like almost straighter than a college frat boy type of thing.
Yeah. People have, you know, adopted that ironic sense of
to where it's culture not even so much
that they don't even understand what they're doing anymore.
It's straight, yeah.
They're just doing it. And, you know, the stakes are really high in the show, too. I like that. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't ever feel... Yes, it feels a little bit silly, but it also feels a little realistic with the way that they manipulate kind of, you know, funding and how they get it and the perceptions of companies equating to getting funded or not.
Mm-hmm.
I really like how, you know, one minute you can be super hot and the next minute you can be kryptonite.
And also the part that, like, lawsuits... And legal maneuvering and patents to play in Silicon Valley, you know, in that kind of, like, you can do everything right, but if someone fucks with you legally and you don't have the money to defend it, you get murdered in a crib.
Yeah.
And I thought that's kind of cool. And also the poison pill stuff, there's a lot of that, you know, like, you think it's a great deal, but then, oh, wow, you just lost your company.
Yes. Yeah.
But the way things ended, I actually think... I'm okay with Richard being forced out, because I think Richard is a terrible managing member of the company.
Yeah, I'm a little scared what's going to happen to that company without.
He did
a lot of vision.
Really directly attributed to him bonehead things that's almost
true.
Cost the company. I mean, obviously he also wrote the core tech that makes it so valuable.
Yeah, he's a very smart guy. I don't think he's a terrific leader, though. He made steps toward it.
Yeah.
This season, you know, he kind of had to become more of a leader. But I feel like his vision for the company as being something that is different is one that's noble and good. And that's probably going to be lost in whatever transition they're going to make. Although, if I'm correct, I think that the junior partner, I don't remember her name, the junior partner from the company, Raviga, is going to be casting that final vote. She has the deciding vote on the board, doesn't she?
I think that
because that was part of the deal.
The Aspie manager is counting on her to side with that company.
Yes, so I think,
but
she's
oust Richard, which was a pretty big blow. I was actually surprised. I thought they might leave that to be a cliffhanger to resolve later, but you know, in another way, I think it's kind of ballsy to just go ahead and resolve that.
Yeah, so I don't know. I'm super excited for season 3.
Yeah, me too. I'm totally on board. I know a lot of people were worried about how they'd weather some of the changes that were forced on them, like, you know, the founder of the company died. Mm-hmm. But I thought everything came through really, really well.
I do love the scene where they're explaining how he died.
Yeah.
It's like, you know, he was camping and he was on safari. There, a hippo comes out. So the hippo attacked him and killed him. No.
Yeah.
Well, so the guy tried to shoot the hippo and he missed. And so he shot. He got shot. No.
It's comedy torture.
It is. I love it.
Which they do a lot on that Spoils of Dying Before Dying, too. Other thing I wanted to. What was your favorite moment this season? I feel like that when they put Elric.
Damn.
Is it Elric?
It's something like that. Yeah.
I thought when they put him on the stand and trial and they did the guy did
Nip
like alert. did a reverse like Chewbacca defense on him. I thought that was pretty. That was the hardest I laughed, I think.
Yeah, I think maybe. Man, I thought it was hilarious. Not when Richard calls double asshole, but Elric or whatever his name is, Elrond.
Like, calls him out on
his reaction to it.
Like, that
just
never
laughing
comes
up
to his
in
face.
His face.
Yeah.
Is really funny. Although, I lost my shit when they did the Mexican restaurant thing.
Yeah, that was really funny, too, in an absurdist way.
Yeah.
One other thing I want to shout out. I know we watched one episode together. I went ahead and watched the whole series. It's Danger 5. Which is an outfit called Dinosaur. It's made from some Australian TV company. They made two seasons of this, 6 episodes each. They're 30 minutes long. And it's essentially the story of what it would look like for a 5-man well, three-man, two-woman freedom force to fight against Hitler if World War II happened in the 60s.
Yeah.
And it's got a lot of, like, Italian filmmaking things. Like, the voices aren't quite synced up. The special effects are pretty dodgy. There's this that particular type of film look. And it's just such a great, so much great attention to detail. And it's truly absurdist stuff. Mm-hmm. I thought it is absolutely hilarious. And then season two takes that, throws it all away, and brings it into, like, 80s genre pieces.
Still with the same premise.
Yeah, same premise.
Fighting,
like,
Hitler.
Like, exactly. Like, Hitler poses as the prom king at a high school. And it's, like, a Pretty in Pink, you know, 16 Candles remake. Then he gets killed and he comes back from the dead. And it's a Night of the Living Dead classic 80s. Thing, and then they did, and then there's, like, a classic 80s action movie where everyone's sleeves get ripped off, and, like, they just do that. Each episode is a different genre piece from the 80s that then they ultimately end up with, like, a Voltron / Power Rangers episode where Hitler has a big mecha suit and he's on the moon like Rita Repulsa, and the Freedom, the Danger Five guys get, like, all the spandex outfits and the mechazords, and there's, like, giant scale combat stuff. I think it's really, really funny. And I guess he's got a 40-minute YouTube series called Italian Spider-Man that's purports to be, like, one of the actual Italian made Spider-Man movies, like, their take on it.
Oh, same company.
Yeah, same company, Dinosaur. And I guess it's kind of like the Always Sunny crew, that, like, two or three of the guys star in it, and they're actually also the head writers and,
like,
producers.
Like a comedy troupe, Monty Python, that sort of thing.
Yeah. All right. I can't say enough good things about it. It's really, really, really funny. My girlfriend and I have been quoting, especially the Colonel Chestbridge, which is the leader of their group, which is literally a colonel. He's a full bird colonel, in the fact that he's a bald eagle. It's a human guy. It's a guy with a human head, human body, but he's got a bald eagle head.
All right.
And then there's a McKenzie guy who is a Japanese white tiger or white lion. He's a human wearing, like, a Don Johnson suit, but he's got an enormous white tiger head.
That must be season two.
That's season two. Okay. And it's pretty incredible. But yeah.
It was funny. The first episode was good.
The whole thing is on Netflix, and I don't know if it's anywhere else, but I pissed myself laughing at that. let's talk about the two new HBO shows, the half-hour comedy, dramedies, whatever. Oh, yeah. Ballers and The Brink. Let's start with Ballers.
All right. Ballers is fun. Ballers is, I mean, if you liked Entourage, you'll like this. If you didn't like Entourage, you won't like this.
I never really saw Entourage. I saw a little bit of season 7 when you were living with me.
Season 7 was not good. Don't judge
by
that. Okay,
well, I found it kind of entertaining in a crazy kind of way.
Early Entourage is much better.
I feel like that it's not a very inclusive show.
Oh, no, neither is Ballers, right?
No, that's what I'm saying, Ballers. Like, you have to be a particular type of dude to watch this without, like, rolling your eyes. And I think, or you roll your eyes, but you also kind of chuckle. I'm a big fan of Dwayne Johnson.
Sure.
I think he is incredible in this. And, you know, just, again, makes me weep for his film and TV and his movie career. I also love the angle about the athletes and the way they spend their money.
Yeah.
I mean, we did a Bald Move TV about, like, a 30 for 30 doc about athletes losing their money. And I just think that's fascinating that you can get $100 million when you're 24 and be flat fucking broke 4 years later. You could be broke, and how that happens and the cultural aspects of it, and, you know, how you can kind of prevent that, because that's kind of Dwayne's whole deal here. The Rockers, he's a former football player trying to keep people from losing their money.
Yeah, he's now a financial manager. He's working at some company with what's his name? Rob.
I don't know what that guy is either. Man. He's a guy you see him in a lot of things.
On the Daily Show a long time ago.
Yep. He's pretty funny.
Crap. His first name's Rob. I don't know his last name. He's real good.
It's just a show of excess, because it's all about yachts and coke and cars and mistresses.
I mean, it's exactly what Entourage is, except replace acting with football.
There you go.
That's really what it is.
But yeah, if you're, and I feel like you already know you're the type of person that would like this or not. So let's just move on to The Brink. Brink has gotten a lot of shit. I feel like both these shows, Ballers and The Brink, have kind of like underwhelmed audiences, but I've really enjoyed them both. What I like about The Brink is it plays with the idea of the United States apparatus as being completely incompetent, but smugly self-assured.
Okay. Yeah.
And I feels like a kind of unpatriotic thing to say, but I really enjoy the fact that like perhaps India and Pakistan and all these other countries have actually got the better of us in various situations.
Yeah, it's interesting. I feel like Tim Robbins' character is really just something that's kind of unique. It's almost, he almost has like an Archer quality to him.
Like a live action Archer, the way he talks to his fellow coworkers and stuff.
Yeah, he's horrible to people around him. He's constantly womanizing and drinking, and he's in really poor health. But it feels like he's also really competent. And he kind of understands the situation better than anybody else.
Yeah.
Even though he's a buffoon most of the time.
Sure.
And I really like that.
Yeah. No, I...
And I like Tim Robbins. I think Tim Robbins is an excellent actor. Both comedic and dramatic.
It's hard to find. And there's a lot of... some of it feels like a parody of House of Cards.
Okay.
Because Tim Robbins is kind of like a Francis Underwood. And his wife is, who's played by Carla Gugino. She's the woman from Spy Kids and from Sin City and a bunch of other different stuff. She played, I think, Karen Sisko in an adaptation of that Leonard Elmore thing too. But she's really good as his wife, and they have that kind of same dynamic where they love each other, but they also bang different people, and they're pretty open about it and all that stuff. What do you think of Pablo is it Schreiber?
I don't know. You told me the other day that he's Liv Schreiber's
brother. Yeah.
I had no idea. They don't look anything alike.
They do not.
He's the jet fighter pilot.
So this is the guy who plays Porn Stash in Orange is the New Black. Mm-hmm. But he also plays like this serious dramatic lead in season 2 of The Wire.
Yeah, that's right.
And it's like, how can that be the same guy? And he plays kind of a more broed out Porn Stash as a fighter pilot in this series. He's like dealing drugs from the ship, and he's got like two families going. It's just like his life is a series of really bad ideas.
That's the thing. I mean, you know, I feel like of all the characters, he might be the most farcical. Like, just based on the decisions he makes.
Although Jack Black as a super spy.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I would never buy Jack Black as a super spy in something serious. But, I mean, yeah, Tim Robbins is a farce, too.
I'm thinking, like, the most realistic character might be the president, because he's just essentially a straight man.
Yeah.
Being torn by various different advisors and, you know, things like that. But
it's funny, but it's definitely not the best comedy I've seen this year.
No,
it's nowhere near as good as Silicon Valley, in my opinion.
It's not as good as Spoils Before Dying. It's not as good as 7 Days in Hell. I keep on wanting to go 5 Days in Hell. It's not as good as Danger 5 from a pure comedy, but it also has a little bit more political commentary than any of those things do too, which I think is enjoyed, and it's really well made too. Really well done.
It is. Yeah, and it's funny. It's just not, I don't know. It doesn't do it as much for me as Ballers does. Like, I go, my Sunday night viewing habit is True Detective, Ballers, The Brink.
I'm the opposite.
Do the comedies first?
No. I do True Detective. Then I do The Brink. Then I do The Ballers. Now, really? Mostly because you know what, though? That might be because of my girlfriend, because she's got zero patience for The Ballers. She's
So she goes off to bed or whatever while you're
we finish up in the studio at a half hour, 45 minutes before she gets home, and I go home and I either run some bounties on Destiny or I watch whatever I'm trying to catch up on. So that's what I've been like my Monday 5:30-ish while I'm cooking dinner kind of thing is to watch Ballers over the counter.
I don't know. Ballers is just, you know, it's light. It's fun.
It is. You know, you can just disengage your brain. There is some plot and some interesting developments. And I haven't seen this week's episode. It looks kind of maybe a little heavy even. People get arrested. Cell phone pictures that shouldn't be seen.
Yeah.
Mothers that shouldn't be fucked are probably fucked.
it's less heavy than you'd imagine.
Okay. All right. I actually probably should have imagined that that was the case.
Yeah.
Got a final segment here, and it actually has nothing to do with you, Jim. Me and Nina from Project Fandom piggybacked a discussion of Penny Dreadful, the Showtime monster mashup that just wrapped up its second season. We got about 20-30 minutes of discussion on that. And again, if you want to find out more about Nina's stuff, you can go to projectfandom.com. She covers over 70 television shows.
How does she find the time?
She's super hardworking, and she also has an army of contributors that help her out. But we're gonna end this episode of Bald Move TV with that, and we will see you back sometime. Who knows when?
Whenever we feel like it.
Whenever we watch enough interesting television that we can make an hour out of it.
Yep.
See you next time. What? So I recorded this earlier in the week. I don't know when this is coming out actually, but I got Nina here. I held on to her from our Orange and New Black podcast because I want to talk Penny Dreadful. And I try as I might, I have not gotten Jim to watch the damn show. But it just finished up, and I need to talk about it. So I thought we could get a couple minutes of that.
Okay.
Let's talk in general in the series. I want to spend just a couple minutes talking about it in generalities, and then we're going to start spoiling the shit out of season two.
Okay.
Penny Dreadful is essentially a period piece set in the kind of Jack the Ripper era of Victorian England, I think you'd call it. Maybe Edwardian post-Victorian, pre-Edwardian. I'd have to check with Kelly to be sure. And it's a mashup of like every monster or horror, gothic horror fantasy you've ever heard. It's got Frankenstein's monster. It's got Dorian Gray, the picture of Dorian Gray. It's got werewolves, it's got vampires, it's got witches, it's got Ava Green destroying sets. Eva Green destroying sets with the sheer force of her personality and acting. Mm-hmm. And I loved it from the beginning. And I thought season one was great. I think season two is even better. What's your relationship with the show?
Absolutely love it. We watched I don't know if you remember this, but before the first season premiere, they put the first episode online, like maybe 2 weeks before.
Mm-hmm. And they did the same thing with season two, right?
They did. And I like when a show does that, especially the first time, because, you know, especially you and I, people like us who watch a lot of TV and write about it and podcast about it, like you don't have a lot of time. So I was like, this is good because I can watch it and just tell, is this something I'm going to bother to watch and try to cover on the website or whatever? And I loved it. I was hooked. I don't podcast it because I feel like some shows you just want to watch and enjoy and digest and like, you know.
I would have podcasted this if I could have gotten, you know,
Jim to finally.
Well, Seth and I thought about doing it, but with my workload on Orange is the New Black and her, you know, already working full time and she's had to help me out a bunch on that, it just wasn't going to work. Because that's kind of our wheelhouse. You know, we did American Horror. We did True Blood together. That would have been a good fit. But, yeah, I will say that it is – I'm jealous of the shows that I just watch as a fan. Hello? Hello? Can you hear me? Hello? I can't. All I can hear is clicking, Nina. Are you there? Well, shit. Pause this shit.
Might have been my headset, but I unplugged it and plugged it back in, and it's good. I am so sorry about that.
That's all right. But I was saying that, yeah, I agree. I'm a little jealous of the shows that by circumstance or fate I kind of get to watch by myself, and I don't have to worry about, oh, what am I going to say on the instant cast or how, you know, what I just, I've been talking with it on our forums with people, but yeah, and obviously me and Cecily are all about it, but yeah, I agree, it's kind of nice to have one or two that you just have in your back pocket to enjoy.
just watch and enjoy. I don't know if I think season two is better than one, though. I think that's an unpopular opinion, that I think, wow, I kind of enjoyed one more. Yeah.
Let's talk about, okay, so let's talk about some, let's get into some spoilers. Let's talk about the pro, because there are problems in season two. And I think the biggest one is where they put John Clare, the Frankenstein's monster, the way they introduced him in season one with this rage and brutality and this, you know, wanton killing and this creature of pain. They try to turn him into a little bit of a wooby where, you know, now we want to feel sorry for him and we want him to make time with these pretty women and have all these experiences. And it, I felt like it, the way they set him up in season one robbed him of a lot of my interest level. In fact, I just wanted him to go fucking die.
Right.
Like when Frankenstein refused to shoot him when he had the opportunity to lab, I'm like, son of a bitch.
I think we may be done with him, though. You think?
I did like the way they brought it around, because if you're a fan of the classics, you know, the Mary Shelley's Frankenstein, that's essentially where he takes a freighter or a train to the Alaskan wastelands.
Oh, really? I didn't know that. Okay.
So, but, you know, is that where he stays? I don't know, because you got Lily and Dorian who are got their like world destroying master race thing going on. And that's the thing. Like, I was so over the whole Frankenstein plot.
Me too.
But then Lily bringing it around and teaming up with Dorian Gray, to me, I thought was brilliant and completely reinvested me.
Have you watched, after watching the finale, have you had a chance to go back and watch any of the first few episodes of the season?
No, I have not.
Okay. So, Sarah, who does the recaps, like I said, I mean, this woman knows her stuff, and she talks about like the music they use and the literature they refer to. And she just knows a lot of stuff. She's really good. So after I watch an episode and she turns in her recap and I edit it for the site, I always find myself going back and rewatching it, cause she made me notice something different. Yeah. She was like, if you go back and watch the beginning of the season, knowing that Lily knew from the beginning, it's chilling.
I bet it is. I bet it is.
Cause I didn't see that coming at all. Mm-hmm. Like that made me more interested, because I wasn't feeling the whole Frankenstein thing either. And I feel like you said, if you didn't care in the first season, you're not going to care in this, like where you're trying to make him softer and gentler and just this lost person in search of companionship and being understood. I did feel bad for him, though, with those people at the
the Wax Museum folks. But they're such cartoon characters, and it was so obvious what was going on there. My only thought was the blind girl going to be in on it from the beginning?
Right.
And then having her be a one-dimensional cartoon character as the twist is like, fuck, it's, you know, I guess I'm still like, fuck Frankenstein, fuck John Clare, props to Lily, props to Dorian Gray. So like, to the extent that Frankenstein gave birth to Lily, I'm happy with that. But these other two emo fucks can get out of here.
So you didn't like his scenes with Vanessa either then?
John Clare?
Yeah.
No. I get the fuck out of your poetry recite. Like, I find it cringeworthy anytime two characters just start reciting poetry to each other, because like that just never happens.
No, it really doesn't.
And I get it. Like, you know, we watch drama because they're heightened realism, but there's like certain points where it's like, I hate John Clare. I thought he was a mess of a character who the show couldn't decide whether we're supposed to feel sorry for him, whether we're supposed to be angry with him, or whether he's supposed to, we're wanting to. So I just like, he's the least interesting. And also, like, I was a big fan of the Prometheus or the Atom monster. And when he ripped him in half, I'm like, holy shit. That was amazing, but then I'm like, you killed this kind of interesting plot line to introduce this less interesting plot line that I guess is more accurate to the books or to the original Frankenstein mythos, but, you know, whatever.
Yeah. Okay, so it wasn't working for you. I did kind of want him to snap the blind daughter's neck. I was a little disappointed.
Yeah, I actually thought, although I guess I can see leaving a blind girl alone in the world to kind of find her parents' faces smashed in and all that is kind of a more horrific thing.
I agree, because you hear her screaming when he's finally, you know, walking off, and also, so you know she found them.
And if you think about it in terms of Victorian England, she's going to be institutionalized.
Mm-hmm.
She's
mm-hmm.
You know, she's not going to be able to keep that thing running herself. She's going to be put into some kind of special school or facility with other blind that are going to be mistreated. I mean, it's kind of chilling if you think about what it's like to be a blind girl with no family in the late 19th century, right?
Right. Right,
like
right,
that, if you think about that, that's like, ooh, that's another. It's like when Jillian got thrown into the asylum in Boardwalk yes. Empire. It's like, oh, yeah. I'm taking all that into this scenario, and I'm thinking he gave her a fate perhaps worse than death.
Right. Okay. Yeah, I can see that.
So that the Frankenstein thing being a mess was terrible. Where are you with Ethan and Vanessa? Because I got such a case of cinematic blue balls from these guys.
What? Okay, I'm the only person.
I want him to fuck so, and I know it's historically a terrible idea when they have these will they won't days and they resolve it. It's like, but I want to see them fuck so bad, so what? Bad.
What is wrong? I am the only person who not only I don't want that.
Uh-huh.
I didn't even like. You guys have been watching this whole second season. When I would read Sarah's recaps, I'm like. You want this? Like, what?
I want it just... so bad, Nina. So
oh
bad.
My God. No, I don't even. No, I don't want that.
What is your problem? What is wrong with you? What is wrong with you?
You really think that they, as characters, have sexual chemistry?
Wait a second. Wait a second. I can wrap my head around you saying this is a bad idea from a narrative. But if you say that Josh Hartnett and Eva Green don't have chemistry, I don't even know what to say because I feel like they're burning up the screen, man.
What? Is something wrong with me? Because I don't get it.
You're a terrible lesbian, and I'm starting to question your heterosexuality now, too. What's going on?
I don't get it. You guys are crazy. And I'm like, every week, I'm like, I'm glad they didn't fuck. I don't want to see that.
Oh man, no! I like every like when they got in that witch's cabin and like a fire was going. I'm like, I like, you know. Jack and Miri make a porno, like, let them fuck. And it didn't happen. And I'm just like, and it's still not.
Nope. But you know what they were good at? Killing that guy together.
Yeah. Yeah. When she starts talking the black speech, it is incredible. Like, when she had that, like, it's, I'm going to describe the scene that's just ridiculous of this woman having this black speech off with a dummy.
Yes,
and it sounds ridiculous, but it's so awesome when it's happening, and she just sells the shit out of that stuff.
She does. She does. It should be ridiculous.
Nobody does demonic possession like her.
No, 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 no. She totally owns that role completely. No, but I don't want her fucking Ethan. I enjoyed watching him kick a man in the face while she stabbed him to death. But
yeah.
I don't want to see them together.
Can we talk about Simbine? I don't know how to pronounce the gentleman's name.
Yeah, I don't
know
how to pronounce it either, but I'm so sad.
Simbine or something like that. I'm mad because it seems like, unless that actor wanted out, which I can't imagine he would, that seemed pointless. Like, it served no purpose.
Yeah.
Like, he could have been like, I know you're going to turn into a wolf. I'm going to leave you in this tower. You're going to bang on this metal door and hopefully get in there and save Vanessa. And I'm going to go try to help my friends. And I'm not going to get my throat torn up. Was there a double door trapped in there?
That's what I thought.
I didn't see that they established that they were trapped in, like, a vestibule. That makes more sense.
Yeah, that was my assumption, that they couldn't get out either way from the bottom of the, because it kind of the curved staircase. I thought that they were trapped.
Okay.
And that's why he was so desperate, because he knew what was coming.
Okay.
But I will tell you that we have a group on Facebook where we talk about a lot of TV. And I remember he died at the end of the penultimate, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I remember after that happened, I asked people, do you think it's a hallucination? Because weren't they all separated and he had...
Sure,
you know,
this was everyone living their worst memories, yeah.
Right.
No, that's a good take.
And because Simbine was the only one who knew what Ethan was, I thought this is Ethan, have that they're messing with him. Like, he's taken the one person who knows what he is and is still his friend and accepting him. And they're making him think he killed this person. And I asked the people in our group, I was like, would you feel cheated if you came back at the beginning of the finale and realized that he's not dead, that it was and everybody was like, we want that to happen because we don't want the character to be dead.
Yes. But no, I'm actually retroactively pissed that that's not what happened. That would have been brilliant.
But no, you come back and he's really dead. But I loved when he took Malcolm in that room and he says, know who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Oh,
mm-hmm.
He's so ride or die. But what did you think of that when he put him in that room and Malcolm saw the ghosts or whatever of his mm-hmm. children and his wife? Like, what was that supposed to be? Because I found it weird that he was... If he's hallucinating them, this is back when he's trying to break the spell that chick had over him.
Sure, sure.
That he would hallucinate them being so kind to him. And if they were really ghosts, I don't think they would be kind to him.
Well,
so I just found that really weird, and I didn't buy that.
I thought that the parallel structures of Frankenstein's children and his children and wife seducing them to essentially kill themselves was extremely well done. And it reminded me a lot. There's like an X-Files episode where this one girl had a brother who, and her power was she could suggest things to people and they would have to do it. And there's this one chilling scene where she, you know, essentially told her brother to have his heart stop beating.
Oh.
And like, it was just really spellbinding and supernatural and creepy and horror. And I felt that same thing. The only thing that I guess I have a slight problem with is that Malcolm and Frankenstein did not beat that. They did not face down their inner demons and win.
Right. It just stopped because of what Vanessa did.
Which is cool because she ended up saving. And that's the other problem. I was like, Ethan getting down there and tearing out the head witch's throat, to me, seemed anticlimactic. It's like Vanessa at this point had to suspect what he was. And right. Also, I'm not sure what his role of Wolf of God is. Like, I'm, you know, as a agnostic atheist, I'm open to the idea of God being a dick. And being kind of bloodthirsty, vengeful dude. But so maybe they're playing with that like, you know, God's got a dark side and he needs some, you know, bad, but he kills a lot of innocent people.
Yeah.
To the extent that, like, I think it's realistic werewolf behavior. And I kind of am going to really dig seeing how he lives with himself, because this is like true pathos, like, and in a way that I rarely engage with, like, this, like, oh, you know, I feel so sorry for myself. Like, I want to know all the dirty deeds he did to the Indians that got him in this predicament, because I bet that's going to be a brain fuck, and just how he can live with himself after doing all these terrible things.
How does he get away from his current situation the way it ends? I was so desperate.
Like, he doesn't. He's being sent back in
right,
irons to
mean.
His like, father.
Like, what do you think? But honestly, when it was over and I was so desperate, I was like, what year was the Titanic? Could he have been on the time?
I think it's because Titanic was 1912. Downton Abbey leads. That's how it opens.
Yes,
the Titanic
yes.
sinking, and then World War II happens, I think, in season right. three. Maybe it's season two. So it's either 1939. I think we're too early for that.
Too early. Yeah, that's what someone told me. I was like, how does this happen? Like, I'm guessing he does. He goes back to America.
Yeah. And I think that's going to be interesting, too, to see his adventures in America and how they eventually get the gang back together.
Yeah, because they all left.
Yeah. Like, you know, Malcolm's going back to bury to bury his friend. Who I can't pronounce his name correctly.
I think it might be Simbine. I think you might be
yeah.
right.
Yeah. And I like how that's in, and I like, you know, get to see America and I'm assuming because this was all about Vanessa's backstory. And I thought when season two started up, my initial criticism is, Jesus, I already got so much of her backstory last season, and now I'm getting like, do I need to know every nook and cranny? I don't know anything about like Malcolm or Ethan by comparison. Seems like they're setting up next season to be all about Ethan, at least initially, which I dig.
Some people actually wondered if Simbine would become a werewolf.
Well, you know, that's the thing. Like, with not understanding the rules of the universe, that's a logical thing to wonder about. And honestly, is it off? I guess it's off the table because he's dead. He did.
Yeah, that's well, I think the people that I talked to, they were like, that's what we thought would happen and we hope, but once you see the coffin on the ship,
yeah,
then it's like, yeah, it would have happened by now.
I think that also, I think they're going with this being more of a Indian curse than like a lycanthropy kind of
virus.
Which I think is also really cool. Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
I was going to say, did you like the villain this season? Did you like
it? I did. It took me a while to warm up to the witches because they're so bizarre and also so mundane. Like, I'm like, okay, I feel like Ethan and Vanessa and Malcolm are going to handle these people no problem because they can be shot, they can be killed. They're like less powerful versions of vampires, but they made it so much more psychological. And that scene where everyone was dancing in that ballroom with blood was one of the most fucking awesome things I've seen this year in television.
Yeah.
And then the echo with Lily and Dorian Gray after they were shot dancing and is just painting the floor red with blood. Amazing.
Sarah got a gif of she puts those in her recaps.
Yeah.
And she's really good at making, she gets it just right. And she was saying that she had to watch that scene a couple of times just to get the gif right. And she said the squishing, the sound effects.
Yes.
Her dress trailing in the blood when they were, she's like, it's this horrible sound that gave her goosebumps.
Speaking of cinematic blue balls, and this might be a little foreshadowing, I was so wanting to see the picture of Dorian Gray. So I wanted to see it so bad. And then when I finally saw it, I was kind of like, not as cool as I was, he looks like Gollum.
Right. I was surprised at how it looked.
And I'm like, man, if this is like how Vanessa and Ethan are going to end up, maybe I don't want to. Because, leaving that to the imagination, it just seems like that's always more powerful. And
it is.
It would have been awesome if they could. I don't know what I would have accepted as, I've seen some depictions of Dorian Gray's photo where it looks like kind of like the house in the Haunting where they had the main guy and he had this oil painting, and that at one point you see it, everything's kind of run down and almost makes his face look like a I was expecting something like that.
Yeah. But, I just honestly, my husband had never heard of this. Like, I was like, you don't know the story of Dorian Gray?
Right?
I think they made a movie with Jane Seymour. I think when I was a kid, I just remember a TV movie.
I've never seen a movie, but the book stuck with me. It's like it's such a big, and that's the other thing. Like these Mary Shelley and Bram Stoker and whoever wrote Dorian Gray, was that Oliver Wilde? Who wrote Dorian Gray?
I don't know. I haven't read it.
I just like, it's amazing some of these ideas that are so kind of forward and edgy and out there that came for so long ago.
Exactly.
But anyway, I'm going to look up who wrote Dorian Gray.
But yeah, how did you feel?
Fuck
about,
yeah, I was right. Oscar Wilde. All right.
Look at you, smarty. what was the, who was the trans person? Alex, what was her name?
Oh, yes.
Angelique or something
Angelique,
like that?
Yes.
Oh my God. That was so, what I like about this show is like, I don't feel like it's predictable.
No.
Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
And this whole, I was like, where is this going? Like when he met, because the first time when she sat down and spoke to him, I was like, that is totally a dude, right? Like,
oh yeah, totally.
That's totally a dude.
She makes a beautiful woman, but yeah, she's definitely trans.
Yeah. And then when he brings her to the house and has her like coming out party, I was like, what the hell? Where is this going? Uh-huh. And then the moment he sees Lily, I'm like, so what I didn't get was, did he, because I totally forgot. So when he went, I'm all over the place. But when she said, we got an invitation, we're going to go to this party. And Victor said, what's the worst that can happen?
Oh, no, that's what I'm thinking. Like, other than Ethan being there, which they were kind of playing with, I'm like, this is a clusterfuck. And I love it. Yeah.
I was thinking of all the different things, and then I was like, oh my God, she fucked Dorian. That's right. Like, yes. I totally forgot that Brana or Brona, whatever her name is. Mm-hmm. So did he recognize her?
Yes.
He did, right?
Absolutely. Okay. And that's the thing. Like, I felt like Dorian Gray is one of those characters where he could have gone either way. He could have been heroic character, and this is him kind of losing his soul. I don't know whether there'll be a redemption for him in the future. I don't know how that's always been an interesting question, because I'm familiar with all these source materials and I'm like, are they going to pay this off like they do in the source material? Or are they just using these as kind of motifs to riff on?
Right.
And so I could see him either. But I like the fact that, Angelique was kind of like the angel you know, even mm-hmm. with her name. And Lily is like, you know, it reminds me of Lilith, you know, like in the apocryphal right. Bible. She's like the root of all evil. She's the right. essential really bad guy. And mm-hmm. and that this was the devil and angel on his shoulder, and the devil won.
The devil won. Yeah, I didn't see it coming. Didn't, because I honestly did not get that she knew from the beginning what she was. And
no, that's, and I think that's interesting that Dr. Frankenstein finally succeeded in doing the perfect job. But, yeah. you know, well, I mean, clearly something's going wrong with the conversion process
right.
to make them evil. Right. But no, I actually kind of want to go back and watch it now, because you saying that, I'm thinking some of the scenes, and they do make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
They do make a lot of sense.
I was a little disappointed, though, that Ethan didn't see her. Because that's what I kept. I was like, when he sees her, he's going to know exactly what Victor did. Or suspect.
Although, I will say that now that everything's said and done, retrospectively, that seems like a wise choice. Because that seems like the least interesting decision.
That's
to have
true.
Him and Dr. Frankenstein at odds.
Yeah, that's true.
When he already had a lot of enough of his own shit to go through. Mm-hmm. But no, I thought this was an incredible, I mean, so what, I guess if you didn't buy into sexual tension of Ethan and Vanessa, that really would color your whole expectations of the season. What was, other than that, what other problems did you have? I mean, I loved the Jewish, gay guy. I don't know what his name, but he was awesome. And I liked how Ethan was really cool about the way that they kind of cutely flirted, and he wasn't threatened uh-huh. by it, because he's a masculine werewolf. He's not going to be threatened by this guy flirting with. I thought it was just.
He has sex. Ethan had sex with Dorian Gray, didn't he?
That's true. Oh, shit. You're right.
Yes.
So maybe Ethan wasn't just being polite.
Yeah. Ethan got down with Dorian in the first season.
That is true. It's been so long since I fucking forgot about that. Wow. This is what happens when you don't podcast something. You miss even more details than I normally do.
Right. But I think his name is Lyle, right? Is
that his name? That could be it. And I didn't, like, the whole Diabolus book that they, I thought that was a load of horse shit, but, you know, whatever. I guess you need a MacGuffin to move the thing around.
Right. Right, yeah, and I felt like that's exactly what that was. I enjoyed him. I felt bad when Whisterface Poole kissed him, and she's like, "You taste like a fat little man," or something. I was like, mm-hmm. "Oh my god, this guy!"
Beware the vengeance of fat little men, because he was stone cold by the end. I love that character.
I thought he was gonna die.
I was worried. I was like, "God damn!" My two favorite minor characters, and like Van Helsing, and like this show is just lethal to all the people that I really think are interesting and want to see fleshed out.
And then they're dead, like, in the same episode.
Yeah.
No, I don't think I had problems with the season. I think the penultimate and the finale of the first season were so beautiful to me. Uh-huh. Like, those were the two episodes I could watch over and over again. And I when he saves Vanessa, when he does that exorcism on her
uh-huh.
in the first season,
uh-huh.
it's still one of my favorite things from the series. And I just don't feel like when I watched this season, I got anything that I connected to like that.
Man,
I'm
thought her
it was a bad season, but yeah.
The thing is like some of the impact of Malcolm accepting Vanessa as his daughter was kind of like muted by my like, well, no, duh, you dummy.
Your real daughter is
a child of the night now, and she's lost, and you're just now waking up to what you have right. in front of her. So like some of that is a little bit kind of rang false to me a bit, but. And so I saw season two as just an improvement in almost every way. I am worried about what are they going to do with Vanessa, because she seems so powerful and like she stared down the devil essentially twice now. Like, is this going to be a thing? Like every season he comes at her crazy from a different way.
Right. I don't know.
For next, let's just talk about, and then I got to get out of here because Jim's probably okay. drumming his fingers. he's getting jealous of me. Being promiscuous with other podcasters, horn it up. But for next season, I saw someone on the forum speculate that they might be getting a little, they might be going in a, and I don't know if this was Comic-Con information because I didn't pay too close attention to it, but I heard that a lot of people mentioning the one thing that they could go is a Jekyll and Hyde situation.
Ooh, I would like that.
But they haven't really every other, like the way season two developed, they'd already established the witch from the previous season.
Right.
So like, who would be, who would be the Jekyll and Hyde? Are they going to evolve Frankenstein into that? That he's going to be continue experimenting with drugs? And because I it would be weird for me for that to just come out of nowhere.
I see. I was going to say, I think I would almost prefer a new person. But if it's something, like you said, if it's something that's already been established, I could, I think Victor makes the most sense.
Yeah.
But I kind of would want it to be somebody new then. All I don't know if I'm that interested in him anymore.
But even then, like, so Jekyll and Hyde is not, you know, that's interesting, sure. But I don't see how it can, you know, it's like, an again, with the witches, maybe my eyes will be open next season. But I was kind of surprised to, I just don't know where they go. I feel like that this, you know, maybe, I mean, I'm really curious about seeing what happens with Ethan, getting more of his backstory, but actually what moves the plot forward. I don't know what goes on, what I'm expecting for a happy ending or even any kind of ending or even a continuation, which this, I guess, is, that's exciting.
Yeah, I was just going to say, that's kind of, sometimes it's nice to not know. And it gives you, you know, because I just feel like with the internet and, like you said, Comic-Con, sometimes I think we know too much.
Yeah, that's true. And I try, you know, so I've been in later seasons, I've been trying to pump the brakes on that a bit. Like,
yeah.
I'll watch the trailers and all that, and I'll read casting news, but, you know, I'm not really into reading the script of an episode a week before it airs. Like,
I think it's because you podcast so much, because I know that's what it's for me. Like, you feel like everything you watch, when you have to talk about it, you have to watch it a couple of times. You write notes. Like, sometimes you just don't, we want to be surprised. You just want to be entertained.
Yeah. And that's the thing. I'm not afraid of spoilers. I still am I'm pretty agnostic when it comes to spoilers, but I do. Yeah. I'd like to have the experience of just letting it wash over me for a first time, because I know I'm going to have to watch it a couple more times and talk about it. And so it's like, having the one fresh experience is nice.
Yeah.
And I don't want that fresh experience to come in a 4-paragraph treatise of, you know, of a leaked shooting script, you know? So.
But I will say, when I'm disappointed, I really wanted Showtime to pick up Hannibal. And I think they would win Sunday nights if they, I feel like it would be such a good companion piece to Penny Dreadful on Sunday nights next year. But
it's not a bad idea.
It's not going to happen. Nobody seems to be interested.
I'm surprised Netflix won't pick that up.
They passed. We actually wrote about, I follow Brian Fuller on Twitter, and he tweeted somebody the other day, and I did a post on it. He said Netflix and Amazon passed.
See, I watched all of season one, and I thought it was incredible, and I missed season two, and Jim and I debated earnestly about whether we were going to cover season three, but the way the timing worked out, it just, you know, with Mad Men and Game of Thrones, it just wasn't going to work out, and me doing Orange is the New Black. But, I heard season three is really uneven.
It's even
crazy. Hardcore fans that I've been kind of following the conversation on the forum, they're saying, like, I just don't like the first two episodes I hear were like slamming, and then wildly uneven and kind of unbelievable. And maybe it not getting picked up is not a bad thing.
I don't agree with that.
But you don't want to see Ethan and Vanessa fuck. So, like, I don't even know.
I
don't know how to do proper evaluate your opinion.
My opinion. Okay, fair.
But no, so you disagree with that.
Yeah, it's probably
not as good as last season, but still really good.
Exactly.
Or you actually put it up with season, you think it's just as good?
I think it's just as good.
Huh. All right. Well, I'm definitely going to get around to it, because eventually in the winter, it seems like things slow down and I start to catch up on the stuff I missed. How about The Strain? Are you excited about Strain?
Yeah, we just did our first podcast for that, and for the season premiere. And it's a fun show. You know, some of it's bullshit and it's full of shit. But we said that when we started the podcast the other night, that some shows you just need to...
You can't
be too hard on it. You just, it's fun. And you know what? Oh, you have to watch. It's probably my favorite show to talk about.
Is it Humans. Mr. Robot? Oh.
That's fun too. But okay. That's good too.
Because I get a lot of clamoring for Mr. Human or Mr. Robot.
Mr. Robot. I would love to hear you guys talk about that. Humans on AMC. Holy shit. Huh. It's good. And we have so much fun talking about it. And it inspires the weirdest conversations I honestly, the conversations get so deep. I'm like, I feel like Jim and Aaron. We don't get this deep on my show, but all like last, it's me, John, and my husband, Donnie. We podcast that and we talked about the third episode last night, and I'm going to actually have to put that out today. You guys should be watching. It's only 8 episodes. It's in conjunction with Channel 4 Across the Pond. They do good stuff. It's good. I would love to hear you and Jim talk about humans. So good.
All right. I will, because I want to see the pilot of Mr. Robot this weekend. And
good.
I'm going to try to squeeze in humans too, see what that's all about.
Good.
Just on your recommendation.
I hope you like it.
All right. I hope Ethan and Vanessa fuck. We'll see if we both get what we want. And if I'll even want it after I get it. Might be another Portrait of Dorian Gray. Nina, yep. Thanks for talking Penny Dreadful. Maybe we can have you on again to talk, because you watch a lot of TV.
All
and sometimes
TV.
I don't get everything. I'm like the polyamorous couple with Jim. He doesn't completely fulfill all my podcasting needs. I need to go and
a couple of mistresses.
I do. I might tap you for that.
All right.
In the podcasting sense, of course.
Right. All right. Go be with your husband.
All right. Yeah. I've been neglecting him. So
tell him I said hey.
I will do that.